Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Guiding Light. You have a sleepy Regina Dawn Akers today. Some of you may know that yesterday my dog had surgery. And last night, I think she was in too much pain to sleep. I think she was even in too much pain to lay down. So all she did all night long was pace the house back and forth and cry, which means Regina did not get much sleep. She finally settled down around 4:30 in the morning, and I let myself sleep till 7:30. But I'm pretty tired. But right now she's resting, and hopefully, hopefully she'll rest again tonight. So today we're going to be getting to the question in the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi. It's question number 24 on page 11. What is happiness? We started this question a few weeks ago, but we didn't finish it. And also that particular recording was lost. So I'm going to start again at the beginning of the question today, and we'll just look at that entire answer. Before I do that, I'm going to play a song. And the song I'm going to play, and by the way, I'm upstairs on my laptop with Jamie instead of downstairs at my desk with all of my fancy equipment. So the song may sound a little different as a result, but I think you'll still be able to hear it just fine. So I'm upstairs again, as I mentioned. And the song I'm going to play is by Peter Mayer, and it's called Holy Now. Let me know if you need any adjustments to the volume.
We Testament, that'd be very hard to say. See another new morning come. Say it's not a sacrament. I tell you that it can't be done. This morning outside I stood. Saw a little red-winged bird shining like a burning bush, singing like a scripture verse. It made me want to bow my head. I remember when church let out, how things have changed since then. Everything is holding now. It used to be a world half there. Heaven's second rate hand me down, but I walk it with a reverent air, 'cause everything is whole now.
So, yeah, it's a lovely song, isn't it? So as I mentioned, we're looking at the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi. And we're beginning on page 11, question number 24. Here's the question: what is happiness? And I'll read the answer and then we'll start looking at it. Let me get a drink of water first, though. Hi, Julian. All right. What is happiness? Happiness is the very nature of the true self. Happiness and the self are not different. There is no happiness in any object of the world. We imagine through our ignorance that we derive happiness from objects. When the mind goes out, it experiences misery. In truth, when its desires are fulfilled, it returns to its own place and enjoys the happiness that is the self. Similarly, in the states of sleep, samadhi, and fainting, and when the object desired is obtained or the object disliked is removed, the mind becomes inward turned and enjoys pure self-happiness. Thus, the mind moves without rest, alternately going out of the self and returning to it. Under the tree, the shade is pleasant. Out in the open, the heat is scorching. A person who has been going about in the sun feels cool when he reaches the shade. Someone who keeps on going from the shade into the sun and then back into the shade is a fool. A wise man stays permanently in the shade. Similarly, the mind of the one who knows the truth does not leave Brahman. The mind of the ignorant, on the contrary, revolves in the world, feeling miserable, and for a little time returns to Brahman to experience happiness. In fact, what is called the world is only thought. When the world disappears, that is, when there is no thought, the mind experiences happiness. And when the world appears, it goes through misery. So, hi, Julian. There is the ability, I noticed Julian's asking, is it only vocal? There is the ability to have video. In order to have video in Pal Talk, you pay a membership. But most of the people here don't use that. We just use the vocal. So, so the question about happiness then, basically, in short, what Ramana Maharshi is saying here is that happiness and the true self are synonymous. They're the same thing. Happiness is the nature of the true self. And so whenever the mind is inward focused, or I'm going to call it right now relaxed, and I'll talk about that in a moment. Whenever the mind is relaxed, there is happiness. And whenever the mind is agitated, that happiness is covered over by the agitation. So let me talk for a moment what I mean by relaxed and agitated. Agitated would just be actively thinking. So let's imagine for a moment that I'm not happy with the weather today. Although the weather here today is very pleasant, that would be silly. But let's pretend for a moment that I'm not happy with the weather today. Let's pretend like I think that the weather is too hot for this time of year. And so my mind is thinking about how the weather is too hot for this time of year. And, you know, I've lived here 8 years and I'm sick and tired of this heat. And maybe what I should just do is move. Maybe I should move to a higher elevation where the weather is cooler and it's not going to be so hot. And, you know, just that thinking, you know, that's agitation. You know, maybe moving is a good idea. I could sell this house. Maybe I could get a smaller house, a cheaper house, and I could use that money, put it in my retirement. After all, I don't have much retirement at all. And in fact, what if I sold this house for X number of dollars and was able to buy a house for X number of, for Y number of dollars? That would leave me a certain number of dollars left. And if I put that money in the bank with what I already have, and if I can manage to live on $30,000 a year, then that money would probably last so many years. Oh, and when I add my social, you see how the mind just keeps going and going and going, right? All starting with a hot day. That's agitation. We're all very familiar with that mind. That's agitation. The mind at rest, you know, still notices the heat of the day. Might even notice little sweat beads, you know, on the forehead, on the chest. Might be aware of the fact that it would be nice to turn on the ceiling fan and therefore flips the switch. But it just bees is not a word, but it just bees with what is. It just bees, right? That's the mind at rest. And so the mind at rest, or the mind that is just being, allows the nature of the true self to shine through. And that's happiness. So when we just be with what is, when the mind is at rest, we are happy. Content might be another word for it. But when the mind is agitated, there isn't happiness. The happiness is covered over by the agitation. So when Ramana Maharshi is asked, what is happiness? He says, happiness is the very nature of the true self. Happiness and the true self are not different. They are synonymous. He goes on to say, there is no happiness in any object of the world. There is no happiness in any object of the world. Well, what if you just got a new car? Let's say all of your life you've wanted a Mercedes sports car convertible, right? All of your life, ever since you can remember, you've wanted a Mercedes sports car convertible. And now here you are, you know, 61 years old. and you finally have the money to go out and buy your Mercedes sports car convertible. You buy it, you get in that car, and you know what? It's a perfect day. The weather is just perfect. You let that top down, and you start flying down these country roads. You know, it's just gorgeous. You're driving the car. There's so much happiness. What most people do is they make the mistake of believing the happiness is because of the car. And maybe also the weather, the nice day. The happiness is because of the car and because of the weather. But in reality, what's happening is that while you're driving your new Mercedes down the country roads on this beautiful day, you're just being. You're being present with the wind through your hair, with the beautiful countryside that you see, the sound of that engine in your Mercedes, right? You're just being. You're allowing yourself to just be. And because you're allowing the mind to rest, you're allowing the mind to just be, while you're in your Mercedes, driving down that country road on this really fine weather day, the nature of the true self is shining through. So what you're really, really, really experiencing is the nature of the true self. And mistakenly giving the credit for the happiness to the Mercedes and the weather. You know, one thing that I used to mistakenly give credit to for happiness was hiking, especially above the tree line. You know, I haven't always lived in Colorado. When I was around 30, I lived in Texas, and my brother lived in Colorado. He lived in Snowmass, which is right next to Aspen. And I would go visit my brother. I would visit him during ski season and ski, usually once or twice, but I especially loved visiting him during the summer. I'd go visit him maybe 3 times during the summer, and I would go hiking. I loved hiking, especially at Maroon Bells, which now is very crowded, but back then it wasn't. Back then, they were like my private mountains. I'd see very few people. And I would hike Maroon Bells all by myself. And I loved it when I got up above the tree line and there were just these gorgeous, gorgeous wildflowers and mountains as far as I could see. And I'm walking along silently by myself, just taking in the view. But I mistakenly thought my happiness came from being above the tree line. So I thought that what I had to do was drive from Texas to visit my brother at least 3 times a year and climb way up, you know, to about, you know, above 12,000 feet on the Maroon Bells and get up there to be happy. I didn't realize that it's just that when I got on top of the Maroon Bells, that what was happening was I was finally letting my mind rest. I was just being. I finally allowed myself to just be. And that being was the cause of my happiness, not the hike. I don't remember specifically. I remember generally the first time I went hiking, and by now I'd hiked this trail many, many, many times. And there came a time when I went hiking, and I don't remember what was going on in my life, but something was going on in my life. And as I was hiking, I was thinking. And what I noticed was that hiking did not bring me joy that day. And the real reason for that is because hiking never did bring me joy. What brought me joy was being. And typically when I hiked, I allowed myself to be. But on this day, I didn't. On this day, I was thinking about something. On this day, I was agitated. And because the mind was agitated, although it was engaged in the exact same activity, hiking, the happiness wasn't there. And again, that's what Ramana is saying in this message. He says there is no happiness in any object of the world. We imagine through our ignorance that we derive happiness from objects. We imagine through our ignorance that we derive happiness from objects. And remember Elie Ruzdar's definition of ignorance. It's ignoring truth or ignoring the true self. Or we could call it outward attention. And so because we are so addicted to outward attention, whenever we allow the mind to just be, to be relaxed, and we feel that happiness, because we're so accustomed to outward attention, we immediately imagine that whatever is there in our outward environment in the moment, that's what's causing the happiness. So, for example, if I allow myself just to be while I'm petting my dog, then I imagine my dog is the cause of my happiness. If I allow myself just to be while listening to music, then I imagine the music is the cause of my happiness. If I allow myself to be while eating a fresh peach, then I imagine that the peach is the cause of my happiness, right? We're always looking outward, and we don't notice that the real reason we're happy is simply because we're allowing the mind to be, to relax. It's not agitated. It's not thinking while I'm eating this peach or thinking while I'm petting this dog or listening to this music. And again, if it was, if I was petting the dog and thinking about some problem in my life, I wouldn't have the same joy. If I'm listening to music, but my mind is lost in thoughts about something that's going on, you know, imagined in the future or remembered from the past, I'm really not even going to hear the music. It's not going to bring me any joy. So the only cause of happiness and the only cause of having happiness covered with agitation is whether the mind is at rest or whether the mind is active. And the good news about knowing this is that then we don't have to get to a special situation in order to be happy. And I notice I have a question on the board. How is Jamie today? She's resting comfortably now. As I mentioned at the beginning of the audio, last night she was in too much pain to lay down. So she spent the entire night pacing back and forth in the house and crying. She didn't settle down until 4:30 a.m. So Regina got about 3 hours of sleep last night. But she's resting comfortably now. So as I was saying, the advantage to knowing that it's the mind at rest that brings happiness is then we can choose to have a mind at rest anytime and we can be happy anytime. We don't have to get to a special circumstance to be happy. We don't have to get to the Rocky Mountains and up above 12,000 feet or whatever, above the tree line, in order to be happy. We don't have to save all of our money and finally have that, you know, Mercedes sports car convertible and have the perfect fair weather day to drive it with the top down in order to be happy. All we have to do is allow the mind to be at rest. So happiness is the very nature of the self. Happiness and the self are not different. There is no happiness in any object of the world. We imagine through our ignorance that we derive happiness from objects. When the mind goes out, it experiences misery. And mind here, in this sentence, means attention. When attention goes out, in fact, I'm even going to say when attention goes out to the mind and the mind's interpretation of whatever's happening. When the mind goes out, when attention goes out, it experiences misery. Or I was calling it agitation. He continues, in truth, when its desires are fulfilled, it returns to its own place and enjoys the happiness that is the self. So again, it doesn't matter whether you wanted to get up on that mountain above the tree line, or you wanted to get that Mercedes sports car convertible, or you wanted to get a little bitty shack by the beach, or what you wanted. It doesn't matter what you wanted. Often, when we finally get what we've been wanting for a long time, there's happiness. Only he is saying that happiness is not coming from getting what we wanted. That happiness is coming because when we get it, we allow the mind to rest. You know, before I got my little shack on the beach, I was always thinking about how I can one day be happy when I finally get my shack on the beach. My mind is thinking about how I need to pay off this bill and this bill, you know, pay off these debts so I can begin to save money for that shack on the beach. And I'm watching, you know, real estate go up and thinking, oh no, you know, if I don't get that shack on the beach pretty soon, it's going to be out of reach. I somehow need to figure out how to get it soon. And, you know, doing budget, right? The mind's agitated thinking about the shack on the beach. But when I finally figure it all out and I'm able to purchase that shack on the beach, and I'm sitting on my shack, sitting on the porch of my shack for the first time in a lawn chair, looking out at the waves, just enjoying the sounds of the waves, the feeling of the breeze on my face, the sounds of the seagulls, the feeling of the warmth of the sun on my face, smelling that salt air, right? I'm just being. The mind's at rest. I'm not agitated. I think I'm happy because my lifelong desire has been fulfilled. I finally have a shack on the beach. When in reality, it's because I'm allowing myself to be. So again, he says, in truth, when the mind's desires are fulfilled, it returns to its own place and enjoys the happiness that is the self. The mind is relaxed. Similarly, in the states of sleep, samadhi, and fainting, right? Sleep, samadhi, and fainting. And I would also add anesthesia. When we are in these deep states, where there is absolutely no mind activity at all, there is happiness. Where there is thoughtlessness, there is happiness. So similarly, in the states of sleep, samadhi, and fainting, and when the object desired is obtained, or the object disliked is removed, the mind becomes inward turned and enjoys the pure self-happiness. So he calls it inward turned. I call it relaxed. And it's interesting because in this last sentence, he also added, when the object disliked is removed. So let's imagine for a moment that we have a house guest. And this house guest is a more than we bargained for. And of course, it would depend on the personality as to the type of house guest that might cause mental agitation. But let's imagine that the house guest is up late at night listening to loud TV while we're trying to sleep. And in the morning when we're getting up and living our lives, the house guest is sleeping, so now we feel like we have to be quiet and we can't live our lives the way we want to. The house guest is, you know, leaving things all over the house, so the house is not as neat as we like it. The house guest isn't ready for meals, doesn't come and join the family for meals, but then is hungry and wants something later and is going into the kitchen and cooking, sometimes using things that we were planning for the next meal and leaving dirty dishes. And maybe the house guest is smoking and we have small children and we really don't want them thinking smoking is cool. You know, who knows what it is? The house is kicking out. Well, the mind is going to be agitated thinking about this house guest. You know, he's overstaying his welcome. He's been here too long. When's he going to leave? He's not offering any money. He's eating all the groceries, right? Well, finally, the house guest does leave. And we experience happiness. But the happiness is not really because the house guest left. The happiness is because when the house guest left, all of our thinking about the house guest also left. We didn't let the thinking go while he was here. We let the thinking go, however, after he left. After we perceived the problem as resolved, we quit thinking about the problem. The mind returns to a resting state, and we are happy. If the house guest left, and we did not let go of the thinking, if for some reason we clung to that thinking about this awful house guest for the rest of our life, we would not experience happiness. Because the happiness is not related to the house guest leaving. The happiness is related to us letting go of our thinking about the house guest. You see? So if he left, but we held on to the thinking, there would not be happiness. Happiness comes when we allow the mind to just be. When we're present, when the mind's at rest, it has nothing to do with any outer situation. And, you know, even when the thoughts slow down, so there's like space between them, right? There's still some thinking going on, but it's, you know, very slow. We experience the happiness in the space between the thoughts. When the mind is really agitated, the happiness is covered up. If we're absolutely thoughtless, the happiness is absolutely clear. It's obvious. So again, this sentence says, similarly, in the states of sleep, samadhi, and fainting, and when the object desired is obtained, or the object disliked is removed, the mind becomes inward turn and enjoys pure self-happiness. Thus, the mind moves without rest, alternately going out of the self and returning to it. Now, he's talking about the average person in the world now. And this is why the average person experiences the duality of sometimes being happy and sometimes not being happy, right? I mean, I think that there may be some people who never experience happiness, but most of us kind of go back and forth. Like, you know, some days, hey, I'm having a good time today. I'm happy. Okay, now I've got all this stuff I'm thinking about. I'm not happy, right? We go back and forth. And he basically is saying that's because we move back and forth from mental movement and mental rest. You know, when we're out on the Sunday picnic with our friends and just sitting back and, again, enjoying the weather, enjoying the food, enjoying the company, we're happy because there's an element of beingness there. The mind isn't thinking about our work week, right? We're just being present with our friends. But then we go back to work. We get all the emails. We start thinking about the deadlines, you know, thinking about the boss, thinking about the pressure, thinking. And we move back into a more stressful way of being. We think the weekends are great, the work week sucks. And actually, it's just a matter of whether we were allowing the mind to be at rest, we were allowing ourselves just to be, or whether we're thinking. So the average person, the mind goes back and forth all the time, alternating between sometimes being at rest and sometimes being very active. And in fact, I remember once Eckhart Tolle said that there was one advantage to television. And that advantage was many people, when they sit down to watch TV, they let the mind rest. They are actually present with the television program. They're not watching the television program and thinking about, you know, all of their problems. They actually allow the mind to be at rest. And this is why so many people think they like TV. You know, what they really like is allowing the mind to rest. He says, under the tree, and of course here he's referring to, now if you've ever been to where Ramana Maharshi lived in South India, it's hot. You know, even in December, which is like the coolest month of the year, you know, it's like 85 degrees. In the summertime, or May I think is actually their hottest month, which I think is funny. You know, it can be 120, 125. It's hot, very hot. And so with that experience in mind, Ramana says, under the tree, the shade is pleasant. Out in the open, the heat is scorching. And that's exactly the experience of southern India, right? And so the tree, the shade and the tree is really a analogy for the mind at rest. And being out in the open where there is no shade and the heat is scorching, that's an analogy for the active mind. So he says, under the tree, the shade is pleasant. Out in the open, the heat is scorching. A person who has been going about in the sun feels cool when he reaches the shade. Someone who keeps on going from the shade into the sun and then back into the shade is a fool. Right? So first he says, a person who has been going about in the sun feels cool when he reaches the shade. So this means somebody whose mind has just been going, thinking, and then for some reason he allows himself to be. It feels good just to be. It feels good to allow the mind to be at rest. It feels good to know the happiness of the true self. But then he says most of us are not wise enough to stay there. We're not wise enough to stay with our mind at rest. Something happens and we run right back out into the scorching sun. We go right back into the mind thinking. He says we're a fool. We've noticed the contrast. We've experienced the difference between being lost in our minds and being with a mind at rest. We know from our own experience which one we enjoy more, which one is truly pleasant. And yet we're not wise enough to stay with the mind at rest. We allow any little thing, even a news headline that has nothing to do with us, right? We allow any little thing to activate the mind and we run right back out into that scorching sun. A person who has been going about in the sun feels cool when he reaches the shade. Someone who keeps on going from the shade into the sun and then back into the shade is a fool. A wise man stays permanently in the shade. And if we look at this, you know, we really don't have to let the mind be agitated. We can choose to just be with whatever is, regardless of what it is. We can choose to be present in the moment with a watching attitude. That's to stay in the shade, and that's to stay in the happiness of the self. Again, a wise man stays permanently in the shade. Similarly, the mind of the one who knows the truth does not leave Brahman. So the truth-realized man never leaves the awareness of truth, which means the mind is completely, completely at rest, and happiness is constant. And this is typically referred to as bliss. There is no wavering in the happiness. The mind of the ignorant, on the contrary, revolves in the world, feeling miserable, and for a little time returns to Brahman to experience happiness. So we all allow the mind to be at rest sometimes. If we never did, there would be no joy in our life. You know, maybe it's when we're watching the grandkids, right? We're just being present, watching them and giggling and noticing their bright, sparkling eyes and their joy, their perspective on things. We're just being with the grandchildren. You know, we all allow ourselves to have joy. We all allow our mind to be at rest. But most of us are still the fools because we don't stay there. We only allow the mind to be at rest in certain circumstances that we have judged as good. If we judge a circumstance as bad or should not be or needs to change, then the mind is very, very active, trying to think about how this change might come about. And we are not happy. And again, we think we're not happy because of this thing that we've judged as bad or should not be or needs to change. In reality, we're not happy because of our thinking about it. The mind of the ignorant, on the contrary, revolves in the world, feeling miserable, and for a little time returns to Brahman to experience happiness. In fact, what is called the world is only thought. And again, he's not going deeply into it, but what he's saying is this world where our problems appear to exist. You know, I think the big news of today is sexual harassment. This world where there's sexual harassment, it only appears to exist because of our agitated mind. Because of our thinking. It's really kind of funny. It's like a joke. The world, the appearance of the world exists because of our agitated mind. And as we watch this effect of our agitated mind, we allow our minds to become more agitated. Which, of course, continues the appearance of the world that agitates us. It's a joke that we play on ourselves all the time. He says, in fact, what is called the world is only thought. When the world disappears, and then he's very clear, that is when there is no thought. When the world disappears, that is when there is no thought. The mind experiences happiness. Where there is no thought, there is bliss. And then he says, and when the world appears, it goes through misery. And of course, when the world appears, that's because the agitation has returned to the mind, the thinking, right? So that's the answer to the question, what is happiness? And again, the good news for us is if we get this, if we accept this as truth, then we can choose to be happy anytime, anywhere, simply by allowing our mind to rest and to become present with whatever is, to just be with whatever is. We can experience happiness at any time, under any circumstance, because that's the nature of the true self. So I'm going to move on to the next question, question number 25. What is wisdom insight? And wisdom insight is hyphenated as one word. What is wisdom insight? The answer given by Ramana Maharshi, remaining quiet is what is called wisdom insight. To remain quiet is to resolve the mind in the self. Telepathy, knowing past, present, and future happenings, and clairvoyance do not constitute wisdom insight. That's his very brief answer. With that very brief answer, I think that means that probably most people in the world are confused about wisdom insight. You know, maybe not everybody would see telepathy and clairvoyance as wisdom insight. Some people might, but you know, like my dad wouldn't. He'd just think that's hocus pocus, foolishness stuff, you know. But he would see learning something, learning from your mistakes, for example, as wisdom insight. Some of us perceive receiving guidance from the Holy Spirit that tells us what to do, you know, when life is a bit challenging, as wisdom insight. But Ramana Maharshi's standard for wisdom insight is even higher. Wisdom insight is remaining quiet, allowing the mind to be at rest, just being under all circumstances. You know what's so cool about that? Certainly I have felt a lot of guidance from the Holy Spirit in my day, and you all know that. But if I had to feel a guidance from the Holy Spirit in order to have wisdom insight, that would probably mean that sometimes I would feel like I have wisdom insight, and sometimes I would feel like it's lacking. Sometimes I'm just not sure what the guidance is, right? You all experience that, don't you? Sometimes just not being sure. So that would mean there would be a lacking of wisdom insight. And I'd almost feel like the victim of that, because you know what? I've been asking. I'm not receiving anything. I'm still not sure, right? But Ramana Maharshi's definition of wisdom insight is to remain quiet. To allow the mind to be at rest, to just be with whatever is. I'm not dependent on having to receive some type of guidance. I can just be right now with whatever is. I can just be, remain quiet about the fact that I don't know what's going to happen next. I don't know what decision I will make. I don't know that yet. I don't know how this is going to unfold. And I can be quiet with that. And that's wisdom insight. And based on what we just read in What is Happiness, it would mean that the fruits of wisdom, insight, our happiness. Because we've already seen that when the mind is at rest, when the mind is quiet, we are happy. And so if remaining quiet is wisdom insight, then the fruits of wisdom insight are happiness. So, sure, I appear to be running out of money. Sure, I do not have knowledge of how I'm going to pay my bills over the next few months. But I remain quiet, open, watching. Therefore, I'm happy. The fruits of wisdom insight are happiness. So what is wisdom insight? Remaining quiet is what is called wisdom insight. To remain quiet is to resolve the mind in the self. Telepathy, knowing past, present, and future happenings, and clairvoyance do not constitute wisdom insight. So I'll move on to question number 26. What is the relation between desirelessness and wisdom? What is the relation between desirelessness and wisdom? Ramana Maharshi's answer, desirelessness is wisdom. The two are not different. They are the same. Desirelessness is refraining from driving the mind toward any object. Desirelessness is refraining from driving the mind toward any object. Wisdom means the appearance of no object. In other words, not seeking what is other than the self is detachment or desirelessness. Not leaving the self is wisdom. So really, all of these answers are just kind of stating again in different ways what happiness is. He says desirelessness is wisdom. It's refraining from driving the mind toward any object. Well, as I mentioned a while ago, when we're driving the mind towards an object, there's agitation. You know, how am I going to get that? How am I going to get enough money? You know, what about my partner? He doesn't want that. I got to get rid of my partner. You know, but if I get rid of my partner, I won't have as much money. And round and round and round the mind goes, right? But remaining quiet and desirelessness, just being with what is, that's synonymous. And being quiet is synonymous with wisdom insight. Therefore, desirelessness, which of course does not agitate the mind, therefore it is quietness, is wisdom. And the fruits of desirelessness are happiness. And that's funny because the mind thinks that it's desiring something and getting it that's going to make me happy. When actually the mind desiring something and thinking about how I'm going to get it is the agitation that covers up happiness. Just being with whatever is, letting whatever comes come and letting whatever goes go, and just being with whatever is, that's happiness, that's wisdom, that's desirelessness. That takes us to question number 27. We have 5 minutes, but only 2 short questions left in this chapter, so let's see if we can finish it. Number 27, what is the difference between inquiry and meditation? Answer. Inquiry consists in retaining the mind in the self. Meditation consists in thinking that oneself is Brahman. Existence, consciousness, bliss. And, you know, although that's a sweet answer, I'm not sure that that would be the answer if you asked every single sage. I think words like inquiry, meditation, contemplation, can be defined in a number of ways. What one person means about, you know, it means when they say meditation is what another person means when they say contemplation. What I find is interesting about this answer is that inquiry is retaining the mind in the self, which means that inquiry is not the question itself. Inquiry is not the question, what am I or who am I? Inquiry is the result of the question, the fact that the mind turns inward and pays attention to the self. So in that way, using that definition, even awareness, watching, awareness, meditation would be inquiry. Retaining the mind in the self is how he's defining inquiry here. He says meditation is thinking or holding to the thought, I am Brahman. So, for example, Inner Ramana gave me the mantra, I am that I am. And I was to focus on that mantra, I am that I am. That here is being defined as meditation. But again, those definitions can change based on which sage you're talking to. So the last question, number 28, what is release? Answer, inquiring into the nature of one's self that is in bondage and realizing one's true nature is release. Inquiring. Now remember, we just had a definition of inquiry. Inquiry, although questions can be used as an inquiry tool, remember, he's not really defining the tool themselves as inquiry. He's not defining who am I as inquiry or what am I as inquiry. He has defined inquiry as retaining the mind in the self, keeping the attention inward. So what is release? He says it's inquiring into the nature of oneself. And that includes, by the way, looking to see where the false self comes from. He says inquiring into the nature of one's self that is in bondage and realizing one's true nature is release. So, for example, I told you guys I'm really tired. I only got a few hours sleep last night. So if I'm upset that I'm tired, I'm really mad at Jamie for, you know, keeping me awake all night, I can inquire into that. Who is upset at Jamie? Who is angry that I'm tired? And often, you know, the answer will be like, me. I'm upset at Jamie. I'm angry that I'm tired. Who is me? What is me? Often the mind goes quiet when you ask that question. And then I can ask, what am I? And I can notice that I am the awareness that's looking right now for a me. I start noticing that I'm awareness. I turn my attention towards myself as awareness. And I begin to realize my true nature, and I hold my mind there with my true nature. Realizing my true nature, holding my attention with my true nature, that is release, release from bondage, release from the belief that I am the false self. And that concludes the first chapter of the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi, which is titled, Who Am I? So So next week, I will begin the second chapter, which is called Spiritual Instruction. So I'll see you guys next Wednesday. Bye.